It is a blessing to be back in the house of the Lord with His people again today. I hope you all joy individually throughout the week. When the church gathers together, she rejoices together. I hope you rejoice individually daily at home, at work, wherever you are. Welcome to all our visitors. We pray that you will receive a blessing and rejoice with us as well. We've been going through Hebrews, and we sang a lot of songs about rest, so I think it's on your mind. And we might get to that some a little later, but the impressions of my mind have changed. I'd like to speak about marriage today. God instituted marriage. He instituted it in the second chapter of the book, second chapter of the book. We know the story. I hope you know the story. You know, God formed Adam out of the dust. Adam did not choose to be created. He was created by God. And God placed Adam in the garden that God planted. God put him in there. And God gave him one law. And right after he gave Adam the law, he brought all of the animals, and I'm going to paraphrase, he paraded all the animals before Adam to see what Adam would call them. Now, can you imagine in one day naming all the animals? And that was on the sixth day that God did that. And I can see the lion. Have y'all ever seen a lion in the zoo? They're majestic, aren't they? I mean, the male lion has the big mane, and he's tall and proud, and he's got his lioness with him. And then you see the turkey that's got the male turkey, the tom, you know, they're the ones that have the beautiful feathers, right? That fan out and big, and the females are with him. Can you imagine? I mean, think about it. The buck deer has the headgear, right? He's got the antlers, and the does are with them. And Adam sees all this, and he says, they're the same, but they're different. And he's looking at, after all of this, God, Adam's got to be thinking in his mind, each one of them has someone like them, and there's no one like me. I'm the only one. And God said, it is not good for man to be alone. God had already looked at everything that He had made and said it is good and very good by His own estimation. But there was something that was not good, not meaning that it wasn't good in, as far as perfect and exactly the way that God wanted it, but that there was something incomplete about it. Now this isn't after He rested on the seventh day. This and that, He's still working. And so God took Adam and caused a deep sleep to come upon him. And when he did, he took out of Adam a rib. You can go back to Genesis chapter 2. It starts in around verse 15 and read. That's where the account is. And he, while, you know, that was the first surgery ever performed, wasn't it? It said God closed him up afterwards. Don't doctors do that today? They close him up and stitch him up, but their stitches aren't near as good as what God closed up. Their hands aren't guided with the skill that God's are. And so God took the rib, and from that rib that was of Adam, he made Eve. He created Eve and brought her to him, and he said, I will make an help meet for him. That means a succorer, an assister, a comforter, one to assist them and to help them. Not a slave and not a boss. An assister to help him. And we know that Adam called her Eve, which means life. It means life. Yeah, isn't that great? What would my life like be without Sonia? It would be not near as fun. Not near as entertaining, and it'd kind of be dead. There'd be a void in my life. And there's a reason for that. What is man's greatest fear? Y'all probably say, well, spiders. My mom was deathly afraid of snakes. A lot of people are afraid of a lot of things. But man's greatest fear is to be alone. Is to be alone. And this is the reason why, because there's something without her, there is a void in his life. Remember, God took something out of him. And so the only thing, so he had a void right here in his rib cage that, what do the ribs do anyway? They protect your vital organs, namely your heart. And so without her, he's vulnerable. With her, he's protected. And only with her. You see, God made them male and female. And there is a void in man that he instinctively wants to fill. Amen? Ain't that right, men? I had an uncle, his void was so big, 3 weeks after Sweetie Pie died, he asked his sister that he grew up with in church to marry him, and he just couldn't be without a helpmate. He couldn't be without a helper, someone to share his life with. Now, all of us thought it was pretty quick, but Uncle Jim didn't think it was quick. He thought it was just right. And they lived together until she died happily. Then he got married again because he couldn't be without it. And he was old. Now, marriage was instituted by God. What? In Matthew chapter 19 and 6, God said, wherefore they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. Let not man put asunder. What has God joined together? Man and woman. It's the institute of marriage. It is that marriage covenant. Now we'll get to the difference between a covenant and a contract here pretty soon. But y'all know, and you can see it today, Satan has influenced man to the point that he has introduced many substitutes to fill this void in man. And the substitutes that Satan has introduced are all imposters, and they can never fill the void. Do you understand what I'm saying? There's many imposters out there that try to fill the void, both in the man and in the woman, and none of them are in their rightful place unless it's God's way. Now, Satan's goal is to destroy the institute of marriage and influence men to put asunder that institution. And God said, what God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. Not any. I don't think that's talking about any. Well, it's included in it. But I don't think he's only talking about any particular couple out there. I think he's talking about the institution of one man and one woman, because that's what we're going to get to the picture of that in a minute, because it's a picture of something that cannot be destroyed. That cannot be destroyed. A lot of people try to fill the void with a lot of different things. Without her, he's incomplete and unprotected. And without him, she's incomplete and not in her rightful place. And she's unprotected as well. Now, God ordained this marriage covenant as a picture of the relationship that Jesus Christ has with his bride. And the reason why it is a picture, God chose that as a picture between that relationship, is because it is the most intimate relationship that could be achieved and ordained in this world. That's why God ordained that. Now, Ephesians 5 and 29. I'm going to read this. Could be a very long and lengthy series of sermons. I'm going to try to get it done today. There's no way. Ephesians 5 and 29 says, "For no man ever yet hated his own flesh." I wonder what that's got in reference to. "But nourisheth it and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones." What did Adam say of Eve when God created her? "She is flesh of my flesh and bone of my bones." And Paul here understood that the whole reason for that covenant relationship was because the covenant relationship that Christ had with his bride, we are bone of his bones and flesh of his flesh. We came out of him, and without him we're not protected, and without us he's incomplete. Y'all understand that we're not in heaven yet. Y'all got it, right? Doesn't mean that Jesus is incomplete. But there is something incomplete about heaven because we're not there yet. It's not good that man be alone. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. Y'all ever seen the candle ceremony? At church, you know, at a marriage where the individual candles, wife has one, the husband has the other one, and they come and there's one unlit in the middle, and they take those candles and they put them there, and so they both light one, and then they blow out their single candles to demonstrate and to illustrate that they from two flames have made one, and they extinguish their own flame. Y'all picking up what I'm putting down? My thoughts, my desires are now her desires. Her desires are now mine. I'm not going to go off and just run for my own, my own goals and my own things. We're one now. We're one. And that's a beautiful illustration of that. You know, some people use sand and they all mix together as in one pot, you know. There's a lot of different ways you could illustrate this. We're one flesh. Wow, this is big, isn't it? It's blossoming into some big stuff because Bible says he of twain made one flesh. Talking about Jews and Gentiles. And how did he do that? By the death of his cross. It says that a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined unto his wife. Where did Jesus dwell? Where does Jesus dwell? He dwells in heaven, doesn't he? Didn't he leave there and was veiled in flesh in this earth? Not that he left his father, and his father didn't leave him until he forsook him on the cross. We're going to get to that too later. And shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. Paul says this is a great mystery. And marriage is a great mystery, isn't it? Even one so eminent as the Apostle Paul said that this relationship that man has with his wife is a great mystery. But Paul said, I speak concerning Christ and the church, his bride. I don't think he's talking about any individual church here. I think he's talking about all of his bride. Every one of them. They're all included in this. And how did Jesus get this bride? How did Jesus get this bride? When did he get this bride? Did the bride just decide to become his wife? That's an American ideal. I tell you what, if you want to read the intimacy that Christ has with his bride, I want you to go back and read the Song of Solomon. See their exchanges. See what she did and what she didn't do. See her slothfulness when he touched the handle and it smelled of sweet myrrh. And he said, come to me, my love. And she wouldn't do it. She said, I'm already in the bed. I've taken my coat off. I washed my feet. I'm comfortable where I'm at. And then she decided, you know, probably be a good thing if I got up and opened to my beloved. And when she did, he was gone. Then she started to look for him. And she couldn't find him. And it said the keepers of the city, the watchmen, they wounded me. But they told her where she could find him. They said, follow the steps of the sheep. You'll find him. And she did. And she found him. And when she grabbed a hold of him, she wouldn't let him go. What a blessing. What a blessing. But how did Christ get his bride? We can find that marriages spoken of in the scriptures are not initiated or conducted the way that we practice that in America. You know, now, I mean, things have shifted nowadays, haven't they? And the women are the aggressors. I've even heard of women asking men to marry them. Haven't y'all? But there's no asking in the scriptures. That's not a thing. If a man and woman were to be married, it was the idea of the man. Now, Psalm 2 and 7. I'm going to give you some biblical accounts. I will declare the decree. The Lord hath said unto me. This is a conversation between God the Father and God the Son. The Lord has said unto me, thou art my Son. This day have I begotten thee. Ask of me, and I shall give thee the heathen for thine inheritance, and the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession. That's talking about a covenant that was made between God the Father and God the Son, and whatever Jesus asked of his Father, he gave him. And he asked him for the heathen. That's you and I. That's the people that he asked for. And we're his possession, aren't we? We're the sheep of his pasture. We're possessed. He's our possessor. He's our redeemer. He's so many things to us. He's our husband, and yet he's our friend. I hope he's your friend. John saw the bride. I want to establish to you that Jesus Christ has a bride. Revelation 21 and 2 says, and I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven. Where'd it come from? From God. Where'd it come out of? Of heaven. Prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. I'll tell you what. Matthew 22 and 2. Let's go over there. Matthew chapter 22. You can follow along with me. I got to hurry on. And Jesus answered and spake unto them again in parables and said, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a certain king, which made a marriage for his son. The king made the marriage for his son. And sent forth his servants to call them that were bidden to the wedding. That's talking about the Jewish people. They always had an open invitation. And they would not come. Again, he sent forth other servants. Tell them which are bidden, behold, I prepared my dinner. My oxen, my fatlings are killed. And all things are ready. Come unto the marriage. Come to the marriage that the king made for his son. But they made light of it all and went their ways, one to his farm, another to his merchandise. And the remnant took his servants and entreated them spitefully and slew them. Wow, that's really not wanting to go to the marriage pretty bad, isn't it? I mean, they weren't just willing to just not show up. They killed the ones that were the servants of the king. What does that sound like to you? The killing of the prophets. But when the king heard thereof, he was wroth, and he sent forth his armies and destroyed those murderers and burned up their city. That actually happened. Then said he to his servants, the wedding is ready, but they which were bidden were not worthy. Go ye therefore into the highways, and as many as ye shall find, bid to the marriage. So those servants went out into the highways and gathered together all as many as they found, both bad and good, and the wedding was furnished with guests. Did you hear that? The wedding was furnished with guests. How many of you when you send out invitations to a wedding are inviting all of the people that you send the invitation to marry your son? No. You're sending the invitation out to enjoy the festivities of the marriage feast. Amen? The king made the marriage. He arranged the marriage for his son. And he sent out the invitations for them to rejoice with her while they were at the marriage feast, to rejoice with them at the marriage feast. Now, and he goes on. What I'm talking about today is the difference between our perceived or our customs in marriage and the actual custom that used to be there to demonstrate the relationship between Jesus Christ and His bride, how He got her, how He bought her, and how He's going to take her home. Now, at this is an arranged marriage. Did y'all know that we don't like that in America, do we? Because we've been living under freedom for so long, we've freedomed ourselves out of understanding of what the Scriptures mean. And I want to do what I want to do. That's freedom, isn't it? Isn't that freedom? Wow, look at all the freedom that there is. This says the king made the marriage to the son. So the custom was that the father would arrange for the son to be married to a particular bride. And there would be terms of that engagement. Terms of that marriage. That's why, you remember, Mary was called Joseph's wife, but they had not consummated the marriage yet. She, in all effect, was his wife. Y'all get it? That's why he was that arrangement had already been made, and yet they two had not come together and performed that ceremony while they waited on that ceremony. Now, I'm going to tell y'all some stories this morning to prove this point and to bring it home to you. Y'all know most of you know, I've been to Africa a bunch of times. And I'm curious, you know. I like to ask questions. So I was over there one time and I was talking with these three or four elders, preachers from, I think it was Uganda, and I've talked to a bunch of them over there, Kenya, Tanzania, about their customs and how they do things. And I said, how do y'all do this marriage deal? And how did you find your wife? And he said, she caught my eye. And so what we do is we will go to the father of the girl. The young man will go to the father of the girl and state his intentions and desire. And then he sends, after that initial meeting, he'll send some of his most trusted friends over there to talk to the dad to convince him that he's able to provide for and to protect her. And so the father of the bride will set a dowry price that must be paid in order, when he actually pays the dowry, it is a sufficient understanding that the father has that he's able to take care of her. Now, so then I asked him, I said, how much is a typical dowry? How much is that? And said, well, usually it's a cow or a couple goats or, you know, one of them said, I paid a dowry of a motorcycle for my wife. And so I asked each one of them, you know, how much you pay for your wife? One of them said, I gave some chickens and, you know, a couple goats. And I said, well, how much your wife and how much you pay for her? And he said, I gave her daddy, you know, some chickens and whatever. And he said, she wasn't worth a cow. I thought, wow. You know how they determine the worth of the bride and the price of the bride? They determine the price of the bride by her value to her family and what they're going to lose when she's not in their house. That's how they determine the value. That's how the fathers determine the value. And one of them said, my wife wasn't worth a cow. Then they told me a story for truth that happened in a village. There was a young woman that everybody looked down on, that everybody didn't pay any attention to. She was ugly, didn't take care of herself, always walked with her head down because she was ashamed. And this man went to her father. And they He gave him a price for her because he wanted her. He gave him a price for her. The value. Of a couple goats. And so when it came time, I mean, this is a community. Everybody knows about what's happening. And so when they saw the young man, they thought, I can't believe that he, what does he see in her? Nobody likes her. She probably stinks. She's ugly. Nobody likes her. Why would he want to marry her? And so everybody knows what's happening. And so he's walking down the street to take the dowry to her father. And he's got 5 cows. And he takes them to her father. And he says, this is way over the price that I set. Why are you doing this? He said, because she's worth it to me. She's worth it to me. And the story goes, the story went, after he took her into his own house, she began to carry herself differently in the community. She began to walk with her head not down anymore. She wasn't shuffling her feet. She was walking with confidence. Because she understood that she was worth something. She understood that that she was worth something to her husband and in her husband's eyes. And so the other women began to talk to her and converse with her and even asked her opinion about affairs that had to do in the village, about things that were going on. And in time, she became the most principal woman in that village and the most respected, and everybody else wanted to be like her. Are you a bride of Christ? What did he pay for you? Do you think that he paid more than a slave's price for you? What he paid to the father was what the dowry expense costs. And the father said it. And the father said, what you've got to pay is precious blood. You've got to give your life for her. And Jesus did give his life so that we would have life, because we're bone of his bone and flesh of his flesh. The father gave his bride to him, but he had to pay the price for her to take her into the Father's house. Isn't that great? How are you conducting your life today? Are you conducting it as the old girl that stinked and was smelly? Or are you conducting your life like someone values you much better than what you value yourself at? Are you walking according to what God values you? Wow, that's big stuff, isn't it? Now, I got a lot of Africa stories. I'm going to tell you another one. On the first trip that we ever made, it was about 11 o'clock at night. Sam Bryant, Charles Kitchens, and I were in our rooms kind of together, and we're kind of on the windows are open, and we hear this commotion outside in the compound, within the compound, singing, revelry, a lot of fun. And Brother Sam said, I'm going to go down there and see what that's all about. And so Sam walks down there, and we go with him. And we talk to this man, greets us at the door, and said, welcome. Come in. We have everything for your enjoyment. You can come and be a partaker of this and enjoy the festivities. And we said, what are the festivities all about? And he said, oh, this is a marriage feast. He said, come, you're most welcome. Come and sit and partake. And I've got a lot of questions, you know. I'm pondering all this stuff, and I'm looking around, and he was telling us about the wedding and how they conduct the wedding, and it was pretty traditional. And he said, I must go tend. He was the master of ceremonies, I guess. He said, I must go tend to some other guests. And so he was making sure everything was, you know, kind of like y'all sisters are doing with the shower this afternoon. Y'all making sure everything's just right. Well, that's what he was doing. And when he comes back, I said, I got a lot of questions. I said, I see the bride, but I can't figure out which one is the bridegroom. And they said, and he said, oh, he's not here. And I said, well, where's he at? And he said, we know that, we don't know where he's at, but he's not here. And I said, well, when's he supposed to come and show up? He said, he's going to come at his appointed time. He said, we don't know when it's going to be, but we know that it's going to be tonight. Sometime tonight. And he said, rejoice with the bride while we wait. That's what we're doing. We're rejoicing with the bride while we wait for his coming. And so it was amazing, y'all. I was there, and we all were people were going up and talking to her, and there people were singing, and they were just a joyful, happy time. And then all of a sudden, folks started to form, and they had a line. It looked like an old Baptist handshake after the service. Folks, one by one, come by and shook her hand and gave her a blessing. And when it come my turn, I said, may God be the orderer of your marriage, and may you have many children and honor God with your life. And then we went on and on and around there, and time was dragging on, and it got a little bit, we stayed about an hour, as it was about midnight, and Brother Sam said, well, I'm tired, I'm just going to go. I'm going to go back. And I said, well, we'll go with you. So we got up to leave. And all of a sudden, we heard a shout. Oh! And then we heard a trumpet blow. And then the groom came in, and he had those heralds before him, and he walked into the room, and all eyes left the bride and were focused on the groom. What is that? That is a real picture of a real ceremony of rejoicing with the bride while she waits for her husband. And that's exactly what we're doing today. We're rejoicing with the bride while we wait for his return. And when he comes back with a shout, with the voice of the archangel and the trump of God, my friends, all eyes are going to be off of the bride and on the bridegroom. Yeah. Ain't that right? I tell you what, we got it all wrong in our ceremonies. Like I told them the other day, I'm not telling you how to do it, but I did do a marriage that way. One time with the bride came up here and she was standing there and everybody out there was bewildered as to why she was there and the groom was not. It was totally opposite from what we do. You know, the eyes of all of ours are, you know, the groom is just an afterthought at best. People don't look at the groom when he's standing over there. They don't look at how majestic he is. They don't look at all that, you know. And then when they play pomp and circumstance, whatever it is, probably not pomp and circumstance, but whatever it is, I'm thinking about a graduation. And then when she comes in her dress, man, everybody gasps at her beauty and her dress. And then looking at all that stuff, we got it exactly backwards in our ceremonies. All eyes, when he returns, will be on him. They will not be on the bride. And during that wedding, people were so confused, and I just had to preach to them a little bit about why they wanted to do it that way. And I tell you, they were all smiling at her and she was looking and waving and you know, they were like, you know, we love you, Sarah, and all this kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden, we were up higher than they were, right? She looked over and she saw him through the bushes, through the lattice. She saw him walking, but she could just see little portions of him at a time. You should have seen her face. It lit up like a Christmas tree. But boy, when he got out from the other side of the bushes and turned the corner and she could see him in full view, I can't even tell you what she beamed like. The joy swelled up in her that she almost couldn't contain it. And my friends, when the Lord comes back, we won't have words to describe the joy that we'll feel when we see him. Because we'll see him as he is. Perfectly. Perfectly. You know what? There's another part of the bride. In Revelation, it says that towards the very end of the book, it says the Spirit and the Bride say, come. And those who are athirst, and let him that heareth say, come. And let him that is athirst come. And whosoever will, let him take the water of life freely. You know what? The Spirit and the Bride say, come. The Spirit is inviting you to the marriage feast. The Bride is inviting you to the marriage feast to rejoice with her while she waits for her husband. I tell you what, if you have a feeling that you want to rejoice with the bride, then you're not only rejoicing with her, you are the bride. And you ought to rejoice with her. Because there's a bunch of God's brides in this world. I'm one of them. You're one of them. You're one of them. My friends, and the invitation is not to become a bride, but an invitation is to rejoice with her while she waits for her husband. And my friends, I want you to realize that there's a great joy in those festivities. There's a great feast that is available during those festivities. Let us not be like those that just made light of it and said, I've got my work out of here, and then don't beat up the preachers and stuff and kill them and beat them up and send them away. Accept that invitation of the Spirit and the Bride to come and rejoice with her while she waits for her husband. Because there's a lot of things that are available to you. Oh, there's so many things. The table that the Lord has set in this feast is unbelievable. And it's full of nourishment and it's full of joy. You know, there's a lot of joy when we have around eating, isn't it? Y'all might even cry today in there. Tears of joy. Y'all gonna do that I'm going to enjoy eating up yonder, I guess, with all the guys. But I'm telling you, the Lord had a great, many times he had a meal with his saints, with his apostles, with his followers, his disciples, and he taught them great and wonderful things concerning the kingdom of God around a meal. My friends, what we're doing right now is feeding from his table. We're feeding from his table. And the Spirit and the bride say, come. May the Lord bless you is my prayer. Doors of church are open because we've given an invitation to come and rejoice with us while we wait for our bridegroom to appear. May God bless us to be a blessing to someone this week. And don't forget to tell folks to come. I love you.